Okay, we're beginning here three lines from the bottom of Kuftet Vav Amud Bet. The Gemara today is going to dissect the Braita that we brought yesterday, the Braita that taught us two things, one of which is that the Ula Bamidbar did have Hefshet Vinituach, and the second thing is that the Bechorim were still doing the Avoda until the time of Hakamata Mishkan. So that's the Braita that we brought. Within that Braita, there was a lot of information, and now the Gemara is going back to discuss those items that were found in the Braita. All these animals are mutar to be put on a bama. When there is heter abamot, there's no requirement about what you put on the mizbeach. It can be a behema, chaya, of zecharim, nikevot, tmimim, ubalim, umim, tarim, avalot, meim. That was what we said about those animals that can go on mizbeach. Menani mile. How do you know that's the case? Amarvuna damakra, vaiven noach mizbeach lashem. It says there that Noach, after he exited from the Teva, puts up a Mizbeach. And on the Mizbeach, he's makriv behemot ha-teorah, the kosher behemot, mikol va'ofator, and the kosher birds. Behema kemashmao, and the way Shita Mekupetzet has the gear says behema va'of kemashmao, means behema and of, are understood literally. So that covers two of those items. Chaya bichlal behema. And then chaya is included because it's subsumed under behema. And that we saw earlier from Parshat Re'eh, this week's Parsha again. With regards to the kosher animals, it says, V'shot ha-behema she-tochelu, shor sek savim v'seizim, ayal u'tzviv yachmur, v'akob edishon to'ov ezamer. So in that list of zot ha-behema she-tochelu, it includes both behemot and chayot. So you see from that chaya is subsumed under behema. And for that reason, you can bring a behema, a chaya, and an oaf. Zicharim unikevot, tmimim ubalimumim. We are gender neutral. It doesn't matter if you bring a zichar unikeva. And we also don't worry about blemishes in the animal. It can be a whole animal. It can be an animal with blemishes. Now, Rashi takes out the remainder of the girsa here. That's likely because he doesn't have the last piece of the girsa that we have. And therefore he says it's not really relevant because whatever is said in this statement is true even post the Mishkan, even for Bnei Yisrael. So then why relegate it to the din that's associated with Bnei Noach? The way that we have it in our gear set, it's self-rectifying because it has an additional statement, which is, Damamar, Tamut, Vizachrut, Bebeima. And when it comes to an animal, there's a requirement of Tamim, and there's also a requirement of Zachar. And that's because the Pasuk says, with regards to the animals, Tzonchem Tamim, Zachar, Babakar, Baksavim, Ubaizim. So there it says Tamim and Zachar that are associated with Bakar, Kisavim, and Zim with Behemot. The diok is that that's only true by Behemot, but ain't tamut v'zachrut be'ofot. That's not true by birds. And then the girsa that Rashi had ended there. And Rashi says that halacha is not unique to Bnei Noach. That's still true even today for Jews and even in the time of the Mishkan. He says, I don't know why they brought it here at all. It's not relevant to the sugya at all. Therefore, he eliminates it completely. Our girsa has this additional line, which is v'itkish be'ema le'of. So that the hekesh in the pasuk that says that when Noach brought vayikach mikol behema tohora mikol ofa tohor is a hekesh between behema and of in that case, and therefore just like by of you can do tmimim ubalimumim, so too by behema you can do tmimim ubalimumim. There then Rashi's girsa just read zecharim unikevot tmimim ubalimumim plafuke mechusei v'delo, just to exclude the case where there's a limb missing, which you're not allowed to bring. That's all that's there in Rashi's Girsa, and then the Gemara is going to say, how do you know that Mechusa Eiver is precluded? The way that our Girsa reads, it actually explains actively why a Balmum is Mutar, and that's because of the Hekesh between Behema and Of. And Of, we know from the Halacha that Of is not subject to the din of Tamut Vizachrut. And based on that, the Behema also, in the time of Noach, where the Hekesh exists, there was no din of Tamut and Zachrut with regards to Behema. Now, even given that, even though mumim are mutarim, mechusa eiver is not allowed. And that's what is said here, lafuke mechusa eiver delo. Amar Rabbi Lazar, minayin the mechusa eiver sheneasa lebnei Noach. How do we know that mechusa eiver is restricted to Bnei Noach? Talmud Lomar, so they quote the pasuk by Noach, where Hashem's commanding him to take the animals into the teva. It says there in Perek Vav, pasuk yutet, mikol achai, mikol basar, shnai mikol tavil teva, lachayot itach, Zacharu nekeva iyu. So mikol achai, mikol basar, mikol achai is what they're focused on. Amra ta'ara, havei beima shechayin roshei evarin shela. Bring in an animal that its limbs or the edges of its limbs are alive. So bring an animal where all the limbs are intact. And that would be, as opposed to if it's Mechusar Eiver, where you wouldn't be allowed to bring it. And even though this has nothing to do with Korbanot, Rashi over here notes that why would Hashem tell him this information? Ela im kein, ilav mishum hakrova shikriv me'en b'tzeito min ha-teva. If it were not for the fact that he wanted them to bring them as Korbanot after he left the Teva. Otherwise, there's no meaning to this type of command to Noach. But Dilma lim ute treifa. How do you know that that's come to exclude a case of Mechusar Eiver? Maybe it's come to exclude the case of a treifa. That's what it means, mikol ha-chai. Chai means that it can live. A treifa, we know, doesn't live more than 12 months. And so what it's instructing Noach to do is bring mikol ha-chai, bring something that will live through the period of time of the Mabul, or in essence is not a treifa. And it makes more sense, as the Baal HaTosfot would say, to exclude a treifa, if the whole point of taking the animals is for the survival after the Mabul, then the treifa is not going to serve that purpose. And Mechusar Eiver can still serve that purpose, so it makes more sense to knock out a treifa than it is to knock out a Mechusar Eiver. It says, you don't need that pasuk, because ha'umil achayot zera nafka. You can learn that out from the subsequent perek, in perek Zion, pasuk Gimel, where it says, gami opa shamayim, shiva shiva, zachar nekeba, lechayot zera al pnei kol haaretz. Lechayot zera tells you that it can give birth. So now, the Gemara says, anich leman damar treifa eno yoledet. That makes sense, or works well, according to one who says that a treifa doesn't give birth. Since it doesn't give birth, if you tell me it has to give birth, then obviously it's not a treifa. And you can preclude treifa from milachayot zera. Eleman damar treifa yoledet. According to one who says that a treifa is able to be yoledet. Tosafot in this sugya in Avodah Zarah noted that there's a correlation also between the one who believes that treifa yoledet and treifa chaya. Which means that if a treifa can give birth, the treifa also can live duration of time. And the one who says it's eno yoledet also thinks that eno chaya. So ma'ika lemeimar. So according to that mandamar, that says a treifa is yoledet, and a treifa does survive. And actually, that's why Tosafot says in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, it's a little bit strange, because if it does give birth, it also will live. And since it will live, then what are we worried about bringing a treifa into the teva? It'll live, it'll give birth, and that's exactly why he's bringing it into the teva. So we'll see in another answer of Tosafot, something that he answers on behalf of that man d'amar in the Gemara of Avodah Zarah, where it says, Amar Kra, the pasuk says, Itach. This is back in Perek Vav, in Pasuk Yutet, Mikol Achai, Mikol Basar, Shnai, Mikol Tavi LaTeva, Lahachayot Itach, to live with you, Bidomim Lecha, that they should be similar to you, so that the Itach is a parallel between Noach and the animals. Bidoma Noach Kufei Treifa Havo. How do you know that Noach wasn't the Treifa? When it says Domim Lecha, means like just like you, just like you're a Treifa. Tamim Ktiv Bei says about Noach that he was a Ish Tzadik, Tamim Aya Bitorotav. So Tamim. Dilma Tamim Vidrachav. Maybe Tamim means that he was wholesome in his ways. Tzadik Tivbe. That already is covered by Noach Ish Tzadik. So you don't need Tamim for that. Dilma Tamim Vidrachav Tzadik Bima'asav. So maybe they're referencing to different things. Which Rashi says Tamim Vidrachav means Anav Visavlan. That's his character. That he was humble and that he was patient. Tzadik is b'masav. Those are his actions. That's what he undertook, or that's what he did. So you could explain Tamim and Tzadik having nothing to do with his physical being, but rather to his conduct and his character. So Isaac kadatcha de Noach kufei treifa hava. If you think Noach was a treifa, mi kamar le Noach. So then the Torah is going to instruct the Noach, the kavatach ayel shlemim lo tayel. Torah is going to out of its way to tell you, oh, you're a treifa. Make sure you bring in all the animals that are treifot into the teva, and don't bring anything in that's not a treifa. It doesn't make so much sense. It doesn't make sense that the Torah would go out of its way to specify that they should be just like Noach if Noach is a treifa. U'mi'achar d'nafka lan mi'itach. So now that we've learned out from mi'itach, it has to be similar to Noach. And since it's similar to Noach, they can't be a treifa. So now what do we do with the lachayot zera, which before we said taught us that you don't bring a treifa because of birth, but then now that we have it or learnt it from mi'itach, what do we do lachayot zera lamali? What do I need that for? Madutema. I would have thought itach litzavta be'alma. That the fact that it says that you have to be together with you, that's to keep you company. Afilu zaken, even if it's old or aged, afilu saris, or even if it is impotent. Kamash malan, that you have to bring something that's lachayot zera. So then, according to Rashi, the way he reads it is that the word itach, it's not clear what it's coming to teach you. You would have thought that itach doesn't mean necessarily to be similar to you. Just rather that you have to take animals to keep you company. Then, Lachayot Zera comes to teach you, that's not what the purpose of the animals is. The purpose of the animals is to procreate, to be able to create a continuum going forward. And then, if that's the case, then Itach can't mean Litzavta Ba'alma. Itach must mean Bedomim Lach. That means that they are similar to you. So that's what Rashi says over here. He says the Hava Mina would have been that itach, he would have interpreted to mean company. And then Lachayot Zera comes to teach you or reflect on itach that it's not about keeping you company, but rather it should be domim lecha, that it should not be a treifa. On the other hand, in the Gemara in Avodah Zarah, Rashi separates them completely, and that you could read into this easily as well. The itach means domim lecha, means that you can't be a treifa. And then you would have thought that domim lecha means they can't be a treifa, but that doesn't mean they have to have the capacity to give birth or to procreate. And that's what Lachayot Zera comes to teach you, that they have to have that capacity as well. You would have thought, maybe itach, they have to be not treifot, so they'll last the 12 months, and they'll be together with you in the teva for that period of time. And since they are there for the entire period of time, it's serving its purpose of keeping you company. But who says it has to procreate? That's what Lachayot Zera comes to teach you, that it also has to give birth. Now, the Balei Tosafos ask a number of questions through this sukya about this limud. First of all, that according to the one who says treifa yoledet, then im tomar kevin de treifa chaya v'yoledet, since a treifa lives and gives birth, is what I noted to you before, that Tosafot thinks those two are correlated, eicha mi'atata mikol chai, then how can you exclude it from the word mikol chai? Because mikol chai makes it sound like it will live, but a treifa lives as well. So Tosafot over here says, v'yesh lomar d'shani ocha de mikol chai mi'utar, it's completely extraneous. Bishapi mishtama limit a treifa. It comes to exclude a treifa. Afgal dechayo, even though it lives, the mishtama chayut gemura. Because mikol achay comes to teach you it has to live a full force of life. Not that it is weakened in any way. Not that it is diminished in any way. And that's the answer to what we brought up before with the Gabe de Tosafot. If you believe if a treifa is, you'll let it. It is also chaya. Then why not bring those animals into the teva? They would have served their purpose. They would have lasted for the 12 months, and they would have been able to procreate afterwards. The answer is, mikol achai, that you require the most fit of animals. You require an animal that can live out in a robust manner, and not somebody that has any diminished living capacity. And that's what you learn from mikol achai, that it comes to exclude a treifa, even according to the one who says treifa yoledet and treifa chaya. So that's one thing that Tosafot notes. The other thing he notes in the question that he asks again in Avodah Zarah is, what about the fact that Noach lived afterwards? Noach lives more than 300 years after the Mabul. So then why is there a question as to whether Noach is a treifa or he's not a treifa? Because it's clear that he's not a treifa, the fact that he lived afterwards. Why do you have to learn the logic that because why would you have the animals be similar to a treifa? Just say he lives for 300 plus years. Of course he's not a treifa. So Tosafot brings two answers here. V'yesh lomar, the shema lo ya bekoach ubriyut kira'uy lo. Tosafot brings the same answer that we saw before, that he brings according to the one who says treifa chaya and treifa yoledet, that this sukya is according to the one who says treifa chaya, and the possibility is that Noach lived a life afterwards that was not necessarily healthy, or not necessarily in full strength. Could have been that he had many years afterwards, but doesn't mean that he lived up to his capacity for life. Now that could be in both, in quantitatively, he could have lived longer, or it could have been qualitatively, that he doesn't have the full life vigor and force, and that's what was diminished, and therefore you can't prove that Noach wasn't the treifa just by the fact that he lived afterwards. So that's why you have to bring the logic that says, why would you demand that the animals look like Noach if he is a treifa? The Tosafot then brings the other possible answer, which is, there's a distinction between a treifa by Adam and treifa by Behema. Even if you believe by a treifa by Behema that the Behema is not chayo, nevertheless, Adam is chayo, because Adam itle mazlo. Because Adam has, mazlo has some sort of ministering angel that looks over him, or has something that gives him the capacity to overcome adversity. And so he says that even if you believe that treifa lo chaya, that a treifa doesn't live, that doesn't mean by Adam that treifa lo chaya. And therefore, just because Noach lived afterwards for 300 plus years is not an indication that he wasn't a treifa, because by Adam, treifa is not an automatic sentence to death, even though as the Baal Tosafot will point out here, and there are other many sukyot and shas that seem to indicate that when it comes to a treifat Adam, that he would only last for 12 months minus. Nevertheless, this distinction of the Rabbeinu Tam does gain some traction amongst the Rishonim and Achronim, that there is a distinction between Trefot of Adam and Trefot of a Behema, and that does have obviously halachic impact as to what the status of a Trefat Adam is, or whether you can determine whether someone is a Trefat Adam. And according to the one who says that a Trefa is any Yoledet, and therefore you can learn out the rejection of Trefa from Lachayot Zera, then Itach would not mean B'domim Lecha, Rather, itach would be a secondary to you. Shiyu tfelim lecha, that they will be derivative to your needs, and you will be the priority or the primary individual here. And that is borne out later on when they leave the teva, where Hashem changes the relationship between man and animal, whereas before they were in some ways on equal footing and they both ate from the same trough, quote-unquote. Afterwards, they, Noach, are given the opportunity then to eat the animals and to take full control over the animals because of the fact that they saved the animals. So you see this concept of itach, meaning that they now become tefelt to you because they are dependent on you for their survival. So now the Gemara completed its limud to teach us that Mechusa Eiver is problematic by a korban of a ben Noach. And either from that itself, we know that other mumim are mutarim, and that's probably what Rashi's limud is, which is in fact that you aser Mechusa Eiver shows you that other mumim are totally fine. Or, the way that we learned before, the hekesh between Behema and Oph tells you that just like by Oph, Mumim are not problematic, so too by Behema, it's not problematic. And then Mechusa Eiver is problematic, and that's what we just were Doresh, then Mechusa Eiver is problematic. And that comes from Mikol Achai, that the Roshi of Arim Shelah have to be strong and forceful, because we learned the need for Noach not to bring a treifa, either from Lachayot Zera, or from Itach, V'domim Lecha. So now, the Gemara says, Torim, Avalot Tmeim, that Bnei Noach were allowed to bring kosher animals on their bamot, but not non-kosher animals. Umi Avu Tmeim, Utorim, Bayishato. Since when were there kosher and non-kosher animals at that time? So how can you make a demand on the Bnei Noach to bring only kosher animals on this Beach? No such distinction exists. So Amar Shmuel Bar Nachmani Amar Yonutan, Meotan, Shalom Nevda Bahen Abeira. What it means, Tahor and Tamei, that's not kasher and not kasher, but rather it means those that had hishchit kol basar et darko al haaretz, some of the animals that had sinned in the area of erva, that they were not monogamous with their partner, and those animals were rejected, and the tohorim would be the opposite. Those animals that were faithful to their partner, they were the ones that were called tehorim. That's great explanation, but menave yadeh. How would you ever know which ones were Tohorim and which ones were Tmeim then? Nevda ben Aveira is not something that you would know. Kedur Rav Chista. Tam Rav Chista heviran lifnei ha-teva. They brought them and walked them before the teva. Koshe teva koletan biyadua shu tohor. Anything that the teva let in, you know that they were tohor. Eina teva koletan. If the teva does not accept them, biyadua shu tmeim, then you know they were problematic. So now, that explanation according to Shmuel bar Nachmani, Amar Rav Yonatan, says that Tahor and Tamei was about Aveira, not about Kasher and not Kasher. And the selection process was done by the Teva. Similar to, in a Perek HaChelek, the concept of the Aron. They used to bring the women in front of the Aron to know whether they were Betulot or not Betulot with regards to the booty of Midian. And the same sort of test was done. And the Teva here, which again has in the Drashic literature, the Teva, is compared to like the teva of the Torah or the teva of the Aron. And just like the Aron is a sanctuary where the Shekhinah is found, so too is the teva, sanctuary the Shekhinah is found. And therefore it functions in the same way. Just like the Aron can be discerning in terms of selection, so too the teva of Noah can be discerning in selection here and picking the behemoth that are ruyot to come into the teva. Just to note, as a sidebar, it's a little strange, the explanation over here, because the Torah tells us that he took in shiva shiva min ha-tohorim, and he took shnayim min ha-tmeim. In the end, Noach takes seven of each type of the tohorim, and then two of each type of the tmeim. So why would he take the tmeim? Over here, it sounds like this is a distinction between those that were faithful of good conduct, versus those that weren't of good conduct. So why did he take those that weren't good conduct? Why did he take any of them at all? Why did he just find within that species animals that were faithful? Because you could argue that there weren't any. So you had to bring two from those species. But it just turns out to be a little strange then, the fact that the distinction is about Aveira, and then he still brought those that did Aveira onto the Teva, which is interesting in and of itself, and also might relate to that the Shivrei Luchot are kept in the Aron just along with the Luchot. And so it's over here, you have the Behemot Tmeot that are brought in even with the Behemot Tehorim. It's interesting, just in general, how to then explain that which is said here. So now the Gemara brings an alternative view, which is Rabbi Omar, Amar Kra. The Pasuk says, Ba'ba'im Zachar Unikeva. Those that are coming are male and female. Ha'ba'in Me'elehen. They entered the Teva by themselves. It wasn't that Noach had to bring them into the Teva, but rather, Vayavo el Noach el Teva, Shnaim Shnaim Mikol Basar Sheberuah Chaim, Ve'abayim, Zachar Nekeva Mikol Basar Ba'u, Kasher Tziva Oto Elukim. So they came. So again here, it seems to indicate that they came of their own volition, and it wasn't that Noach was entering them into the Teva. So then, the question to be answered is, how do they know that they were Tehorim or Tmeim? So that is that they were going to be Tahor in the future, Tmeim in the future, which means these are animals that will be kasher in the future, will be tamei, not kasher in the future. And the discernment was done by the fact that they themselves came in. Those that were tamei entered on their own 2x2, and those that were tehorim came in 7x7, and therefore it was a distinction that was determined by the animals themselves bringing in the right number into the teva, and that indicated to Noach that there were 14 of the tehorim and 2 of the tamei. Amar Mar, so again, back to the braita that we brought yesterday, Vakol Karvu Olot, that all the korbanot that are brought on a Bamata Yachid are Olot. Olot in Shlamim Lo. Sounds like this, you can only bring on a Bamata Yachid in Zmanet Arbanot. Bamot, you can only bring in Ola, you can't bring a Shlamim. Vaktiv, doesn't it say in Shmot Chav Dalet, which is, according to Rashi, this was the Kritut Abrit that took place prior to Bamata Arzinai, it says, Vayizbuchu, Zvachim Shlamim Lashem, Parim, and according to the Ramban and the Ibn Ezra who say that it was post Har Sinai, it still was pre Amishkan. And so there was still Zman Heter Abamot. If that's the case, why does it say there, Vayizbuchu Zvachim Shlamim, that they brought Korbanot that were Shlamim, Lashem, Parim, Ela Eima. So you have to amend the statement in the Braita to read the way that we have it in our Gemara, it just says the same thing that we have, which is Akol Karvu Olot. But you look down in the Shittim Mikubetzet Otchet, changes it Lakol Karvu Olot, and similarly in Rashi it says Lakol Karvu Olot. And that means, Hakol Karvu Olot, the understanding of Hakol means it's a reference back to the items that were listed beforehand, which is all the Behema, Of, the Chaya, the Zachar, Nekeva, Balmum, Tamim. Hakol Karvu Olot. All of those were brought as Olot. On the other hand, if you change it, amend the Braita to say, Lakol Karvu Olot, it's not a reference back to those items listed in the Braita, but it's an indication that both Bnei Israel and Bnei Noach, Karvu Olot, they brought Olot. Then, later on, this is the Girsa of Rashi, not what we have in our Gemaras. So later on, once Bnei Yisrael had Matan Torah, and they were chosen, Karvu Lahem Shlamim, then they brought Shlamim. That still doesn't really answer the question about what you do about Shmot Chav Dalet, because that was still pre-Matan Torah. So now you probably have to draw a distinction between a Ben Noach and Yisrael prior to Matan Torah. Because what this is suggesting is that the Bnei Noach and the Yisraelim, both of them brought Olot, and then Bnei Yisrael were given a separate, special instruction to bring Shlamim as well. And that takes place post-Matan Torah. But there might have been other stages for Bnei Yisrael, whereby Bnei Yisrael, even though prior to Matan Torah they were similar to Bnei Noach, they might have been exactly like a Ben Noach. And that is, they might have brought Shlamim in a different manifestation. So they discussed bringing Shlamim where you don't eat the Basar, bringing Shlamim where you don't do Hefshet Menituach, or it might be that before Matan Torah, even though the Jews did not get the instructions of Shlamim, they still were different than the Bnei Noach, and they were allowed to bring Shlamim, because they already had left Mitzrayim. They already formed into a nation of Klal Yisrael, they just were not post-Matan Torah. Their status might already have changed at that point in time. So then, the way that the Girsa that we have in our Gemara is, Akol Karvu Olot Ushlamim, that they amend the Braita to add in the word Shlamim. Vatanya Aval Shlamim Lo, Ki Im Olot, don't we have another Braita that says specifically not Shlamim, only Olot, Olot in Shlamim Lo. So there you can't do what we did here and put an emendation, because it's explicit that the Shlamim are not counted. Rashi leaves that entire thing out. It says, Lakol Karvu Olot, Olot in Shlamim Lo, and that's a statement of the Gemara, that Olot were allowed, Shlamim were not, Kiman Damar. And this follows according to the position, Lo Karvu Shlamim Bnei Noach. The Bnei Noach did not bring Shlamim, and then according to Rashi means that's the explanation of why Lakol Karvu Olot, why both Bnei Yisrael and Bnei Noach brought only Olot and not Shlamim, and that's because Bnei Noach were not permitted to bring Shlamim. On the other hand, the Girsa that we have, which is that they amended our Braita to read Akol Karvu Olot Ushlamim, then this is the explanation for the Braita that says they did not bring Shlamim. Our Braita might think that they brought Olot and Shlamim, but the other Braita says they did not bring Shlamim. So that Braita is following the Mandamar, Bnei Noach, don't bring Shlamim. Ditmar, because you have a machloket, Rabbi Elazar, Rabbi Yossi Bar Chanina, Chadamar Karvu Shlamim Bnei Noach. One of them believes that Bnei Noach did bring Shlamim. Chadamar, Lo Karvu Bnei Noach Shlamim, that they did not bring Shlamim. My time of the mandamar kavushlamim bnei Noach. What is the reasoning behind the one who says that bnei Noach did bring shlamim? Dichtiv, as the pasuk says, vehevel hevi gam hu mi bichorot zono. Hevel copying Cain also brings korbanot from the first of his flocks, umi chel behen, and from their fats. Ezu davar shechel bo karev legabe mizbeach. Which korban only has the fats that go on the mizbeach? Vein kulo karev mizbeach. But the entirety of the animal doesn't go on mizbeach. Habi omer, ze shlamim. That is eshlamim. Truth is that kodshei kodashim also have that, but by a bamat yachid, you can only bring voluntary offerings, which is an olah and a shlamim, and an olah goes kulo al mizbeach. So the only option left for something that's chelev that goes on the mizbeach, where you'd be able to eat the basar, is a shlamim. So my time at damar and damar lo karvu bnei noach shlamim. What's the reason behind the one who says that bnei noach did not bring shlamim? Dichtiv, because the pasuk says in Shir Shirim, Uri tzafon uvoi teiman, awaken the north and come in the south. Uri means to awaken, or the na'er means to shake out or to sweep away. So that's what it's saying here. Tit na'er uma shemaseh b'tzafon, sweep away or move away the nation who does everything in the north. V'tavo uma shemaseh b'tzafon u'darom, and along should come the nation that does things both in the north and the south. Meaning that an olah, which is kodshei kodashim, is only shechted in the north side. Shlamim, which are kodshim kalim, are shechted both in the north and in the south. So what it's saying is, make room for Bnei Yisrael, because we're going to move out all those nations that only bring olot, and we're going to place them with the nation that brings olot u'shlamim. We're going to place them with the nation that had Matan Torah, by which they had the new din of shlamim given to them, and they bring korbanot that are associated both with the tzafon and the darom. And that means that those that should come forth to Melech HaMashiach are Bnei Yisrael and not the Umot, but the distinction is driven by Korbanot. And you see here that the Bnei Noach only bring Olot, and they do not bring Shlamim. Now, Mar Nami Aktiv Umechel Behen. What about the fact that, according to this, Mandamar quotes from Shir HaShirim, he also has the Pasuk of Umechel Behen. What's he going to do with that? Misham Nehem Didhu. Mechel Behen doesn't mean from their fats. It means from the fattest amongst them. Which means that it's the best of those that were brought, he put on as a korban, not a specific part of the animals that he brought. Mar nami aktiv, uri tzafon. What is the mandamar that says they did bring shlamim? Who brings that proof from Hevel? What does he do with the pasuk in Shir HaShirim? Hau b'kibbutz galiotu dichtiv. That's written with the ingathering of the exiles. And that means that uri tzafon uvoi teiman means bring in the exiles from the north, bring in the exiles from the south, bring them from all over to meet Melech HaMashiach. And therefore, it's not about the distinction between Bnei Yisrael and the Umot Olam with regards to Olot and Shlamim, but rather it's about all the different locations where Bnei Yisrael are found, that they should be gathered in from the north and from the south, because they are dispersed in all directions. Vakti, even doesn't the pasuk say in Shmot, Vayom Moshe, Gam ata titein biyadenu zvachim veolot, vasino l'Hashem Elokeinu? Doesn't Moshe Rabbeinu demand of Paro that he should give animals or let their animals go with them in order that they can bring korbanot of zvachim and olot b'midbar? If that's the case, zvachim is shlamim and olot are olot, and Bnei Yisrael pre Matan Torah have the designation of being a ben Noach. So zvachim la'achila v'olot la'akrava. So zvachim, and we noted this before, the word zebach or zvachim can have two meanings in the Torah. Zvicha can mean something that is killed for eating, or in essence it means shchita, the eating of the animal. Or zvicha can also mean shchita in the religious sense, that it is something that is put on the mizbeach, or something that is sacrificed to Hashem, and there it's a reference to shlamim. So what they're suggesting here is that the word zvachim over is not in the religious context of something that's brought as a korban, but rather zvachim is lachila, that they ate those animals, and olot were those that were the hakrava put on the mizbeach. Ba'aktiv, what about the fact that when Yitro comes in the beginning of Parshat Yitro, it says, Vayikach Yitro chotei Moshe ola uzvachim. So my answer is, ha'ola achar matan Torah dichtiv. That took place post-matan Torah, even though it's at the beginning of Parshat Yitro, and matan Torah is afterwards. Nevertheless, ein mukdam u'muchar batorah. Anicha the mandamar Yitro achar matan Torah, yeah. That works well according to the mandamar that says Yitro took place, or the whole story of Yitro took place post-matan Torah. According to one who says that the placement of the parshia before Matan Torah is where it belongs, and that's when Yitro came. Ma'ika the Meimar. What are you going to do with Zvachim and Olot? Deitmar. B'nei Rabbi Chia, v'Rabbi Yeshua ben Levi. This is the Machloket Tanaim. as to when Yitro joined Klal Yisrael, came to visit Klal Yisrael. Chadamar Yitro kodem matan toraya. One of them says Yitro visited, and the story and the parshia of Yitro is before matan torah. Chadamar Yitro achar matan toraya. Parshia of Yitro is after matan torah. Again, we've spoken about this in the past, in other places in Shas, in Avodah Zarah, explaining that there is a massive machloket Tanaim, Amoraim, and then Rishonim, as to what happens with Parshat Yitro. And the confusion arises both because there is a Parshat Yitro that is found in the beginning of Parshat Yitro, and there's also a Parshia Bet Yitro that is found in Parshat Balotcha. So the question is, what is the connection between that which is found in Balotcha and that which is found in the beginning of Yitro? Is that something that is two different stories? Is that something that the stories are connected? Then if they are connected, where is the proper placement of the stories? In addition, Yitro makes a suggestion for setting up the judges and the court system. That would imply that they had dinim already, and they had mishpatim to adjudicate, which would then again indicate that it was post-matan Torah, as well as the fact that it says that Yitro came elamidbar sheu chone sham har elukim. Har elukim is a terminology for Har Sinai, and that is not a location that was already identified before matan Torah when Yitro shows up. So that would also be another indicator that Yitro was post-matan Torah. So you have different pieces of evidence in each direction, and the question is, which one do you allow to dictate over here, as well as the fact, as well as whether you believe there can be ein muktam u'muchar b'torah, whether it is ein muktam u'muchar b'torah, or like the Ramban believes that everything is muktam u'muchar b'torah, therefore the placement is important, and if it's found here, it means that that's where it happened. So all of that contributes to this machloket of Chadamar Yitro kodem matan toraya, Chadamar Yitro achar matan toraya, Lamanda Amar Yitro kodem matan toraya, Kasavar Shlamim hikrivu b'nei Noach. So, of course, what we'll have to say is, the one who believes that Yitro came before Matan Torah, he'll be correlated with the position, or hold of that position, that believes that Bnei Noach could bring Shlamim. He won't reconcile with the opinion that says that Bnei Noach did bring Shlamim. On the other hand, the one who says that it was post-Matan Torah, he could say that Bnei Noach didn't bring Shlamim. Kitanae, and this is like a machloket Tanaim, that's what compels him to come and join Bnei Israel. Mashmua Shama. What news did he hear? Uba v'nitkayer, and that caused him or gave him the impetus for converting. Rabbi Yeshua Omer, Milchemet Amalek Shama. He heard about Milchemet Amalek, Sharei Kitiv B'tzido. Because at the end of Parshat B'Shalach is the battle between Yeshua and Amalek. And there it says, V'yachlosh Yeshua et Amalek v'tamo l'fi charev. So the juxtaposition of the Parshiot, how he heard about Milchemet Amalek, and that's why he comes afterwards. That's the Shmua Shashama. Rabbi Elazar Amodeya Omer, Maton Torah Shama Uba. He heard about Matan Torah and came. That would mean that it was post-Matan Torah. And that's what the Gemara is saying, is this is a similar machloket Tanaim. According to one who says that he heard about Amalek, that seems to indicate it was before Matan Torah. According to Blazar Modai, who says that he heard about Matan Torah, this would have to be post-Matan Torah. What's interesting is the Ramban ala Torah brings as one of his proofs that Yitro took place pre-Matan Torah, is that he doesn't enumerate it amongst the items that he heard in Parshat Yitro. Over there, Yitro gives a list of things that compel him to come. It says, that Hashem took Bnei Yisrael out of Mitzrayim. And then, Moshe tells over to Yitro, So he gives over information about what happened too. Now, if Matan Torah had already taken place, the Ramban says that it's such a significant and seminal event that you would have expected Moshe to relay that to Yitro, or you would have expected Yitro to hear about it. Given that, the Ramban says it's clear that this took place pre-Matan Torah. Now, obviously, Rabbi Elazar HaMoldai would not reconcile with that position, because he believes that it was post-Matan Torah, and the news that Yitro heard was that of Matan Torah. Kishinit Natorah Yisrael, when the Torah was given to Yisrael, Yakolo Leich Misofo Lamat Sofo. The voice or the sounds went from one end of the world to the other end of the world. And that is the description of Mamar Har Sinai. So you have the kolot and the brakim, and you have the kol ha-shofar, and then you have the Moshe Yidaber, and that Hashem answers him. And also in Devarim, it says that Devarim Eile Diber Hashem Kol Kachem Bahar Mitoch Ha'esh Hanan Barafel Kol Gadol Velo Yasaf. So all of those kolot could be going Misofo Olam Vat Sofo. Chol Malchei Obdei Kochavim Achsadam Re'ada. They were captured by trembling fear Bechelehen in their palaces. Ve'amru Shira. And they end up singing praise to HaKadosh Baruch Hu. Shenamar Ubeichalo Kulo Omer Kavod. Because it says that in their palaces, in their places of residence, they all give honor and they sing praise to Hashem. Nitkapsu kulam etzel Bilam Arasha. All of them came to seek counsel from Bilam Arasha. V'amlo, ma kol ha'amon asher shamanu. What is all that noise that we are hearing? Shema mabul ba le'olam. Maybe Hashem is bringing a flood back to the world again. Sashem la'mabul yashav. So they eliminate here in the Girsa Amar Lahem. This is not Bilam's response to them, but by part of their question, which is, Hashem lo mabul yashav. Maybe Hashem sat down to bring a flood. Amar lahem, Bilam answers them and says, that can't be possible, because v'yishev Hashem melech le'olam. Hashem already promised that he will remain the king over the olam, the world that exists now, and he would not destroy the world again. K'var nishba kodesh boch hu she'enu mevi mabul le'olam. That he's not going to destroy the world again. Amar lo mabul shamayim enu mevi. Maybe he won't bring a mabul of water to destroy the world. About mabul shayish maybe, but he'll bring a mabul, a deluge of fire that will destroy the world. Shneamar ki be'esh Hashem nishpat, that Hashem through fire brings justice. Amalem kvar nishba sheinu mashchit kol basar. He already gave a promise that he will not wipe out all living beings on earth anymore. So that's not going to happen. So ma kol amon hazeh sheshamanu. So they say, okay, if that's the case, what is all this noise that we're hearing? Amalem chemdat tova yesh lo bebeit ginazav. There was this special desirable gift that Hashem has in his storehouses, in his treasury. Shaita gnuzai tzlo, that was kept there for tat kuf ayin dalet dorot kodem shnim raulam, for 974 years before the world was created. That is because a Torah is given after 26 dorot from the creation of the world. And the pasuk says in Tehillim, Zachar le'olam brito, davar tziva le'elef dor. Hashem remembers his covenant forever. Davar tziva le'elef dor. He gave it, or he commanded in it, after 1,000 generations. Well, if there are only 26 generations from the creation of the world until Matan Torah, how do you get to 1,000? That's the remaining 974 that were pre-Briat ha'olam. And this, again, accords with many of the Mamrei Chazal and the Midrashim that tell us that the Torah pre-exists the created world, and that the Torah is the blueprint of the world. Hashem istaka baraito bara alma. All of those connect to this, that the Torah is the purpose and the foundation of the world, and therefore it pre-exists the world as we know it in creation. And that's the meaning of this 974 dorot before the creation of the world. And now he wants to give it to his children. Shneamar Hashem oz lamo yitein. Hashem wants to give the oz, the strength, to his nation. And as Rashi notes over here, Oz is Torah Shim Mozan Shel Yisrael, the Torah which is the strength of Klal Yisrael. Miyad Patchu Kulam Ve'amru. That's why all of them then opened and said, Hashem Yivarech Et Amo B'Shalom. That Hashem should bless his nation B'Shalom in peace. So now, the whole Tehillim Kavtet that we say on Friday nights as part of Kabbalat Shabbat, all the words Kolot there are a reference to Mamad Har Sinai. And those are the kolot of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And now the Gemara here is framing a story around those kolot that are mentioned there in the psukim that are mentioned there about the fear that was struck, or the awe that was struck into the kings of the other nations from hearing the great sounds and the voice of HaKadosh Baruch Hu. And they come to query Bilam as to what's going on. And they make suggestions and Bilam rejects it. And in the end tells them that Hashem is giving his precious gift to Klal Yisrael. And, in essence, the way of the world has now changed. Until this point in time, Hashem's way of dealing with the world was, if they did what they were supposed to do, they lived. They didn't do what they were supposed to do, Hashem destroyed the world. That's what the Mabul was. Now we're starting a new era, by which the world, or the rectification, that which goes wrong in the world, is going to come through Klal Yisrael. Klal Yisrael is going to get the Torah, which is the blueprint of the world. It's the goal, and the raison d'etre of the world. And now, in order to create a tikkun olam, and to bring a rectification of things that go wrong, B'nai Yisrael are going to be a chosen nation to lead and to influence those that are around them. They're going to be the Orla Goyim. And that's what's meant over here. that Hashem owes them oitein, and therefore the response of the other nations, Hashem yivarech et amo b'shalom, that Hashem should bless his nation with peace, meaning that they should succeed at their mission, because then that will bring around the geula atida, when they are successful to bring a tikkun olam to the chol olam, a new method of Hashem interacting with the world, and that's what's being spoken to in that parak of Tehillim. And the meaning of the word b'shalom here, but similar to what the Gemara says at the end of Masech Brachot, b'shalom is b'shleimuto, that in their wholeness, or in their completion, that Hashem should bless B'nai Yisrael, that they should bring the world to that complete or full state. One of the reasons that we stand for that parak in Tehillim is partly because the Midrash over here says it references the Har Sinai, and we know that the people stood at Har Sinai because of the presence of the Shekhinah, as well as the fact that it has the Shem Hashem in there 18 times, and that is correlated with Shmona Esrei, and it's like a mini Shmona Esrei in a sense, and that's why we also stand for that Perek in Tehillim on Friday nights in Kabbalat Shabbat. So now, Rabbi Elazar Omer, so now we have a third opinion as to what Yitro heard, and again, this is probably the simplest and most straightforward explanation, because in Yitro, at the beginning of the Parsha, it says that, Vayishma Yitro, Kohen Rehanu, Chotei Mashet, Kol Asher Aser Elokim, Moshe L'Yisrael Amo, Ki Otzi Hashem Et Yisrael Mimitzrayim. And so Rabbi Elazar Omer, Kriyat Yamsuf Shamau Ba. He heard about Kriyat Yamsuf. That's what brought him to come visit Kalal Yisrael in the Midbar. Shinamar, Vayikishma, Kol Malchei Amori, because it says in the Pasuk in Yoshua, that once all the Malchei Amori had heard, Vav Rachav HaZonah Amra, Lushlechei Yoshua. And that's what Rechav HaZonah says to the spies or the messengers sent by Yeshua, Ki Shamanu, we have heard that the Sheovish Hashem et Mei Yamsuf, that Hashem had dried out the bed of the Yamsuf to allow Bnei Yisrael to cross through. Now the truth is that in Yeshua, these two psukim are not really correlated with each other. Vayikishmoa Komalchei Amori, which is found in Yeshua Hey, where it says, Vayikishmoa Komalchei Amori, Hashem Eira Yaden Yama, Vachol Melech HaKnani Hashel Hayam, Et Hashem Vish Hashem Et Mei Hayardein Mipnei Yisrael, Ad Avram, Vayimas Levavam, Leibam Od Ruach Mipnei Bnei Yisrael. So the Gemara here quotes a pasuk from Perek Hey in Yoshua, which is really referencing to crossing of the Yardein and not the crossing of the Yamsuf. And then it co-joins it with Afro Chavazuna, Amar L'Shluchei Yoshua, Ki Shamanu Et Hashem Vish Hashem Et Mei Yamsuf. So Vayikishmo Kol Malchei Amori is a reference to later on in Yoshua and the Yardein. Yet, Chazal here conflate it with the statement of Rachav back in Perek Bet, which is telling the Meraglim, Yoshua Bet, Pasuk Yud and Yud Aleph, the Gemara is pulling pieces from each of them. It says, Ki Shamanu et Hashem Vish Hashem et Mei Yamsuf Mipnechem B'tzeitchem Mimitzrayim. We heard how Hashem dried out the bed of the Yamsuf when you left Mitzrayim. Ve'ashe'asitem l'shnei Malchei Amori Hashem Yardein. And we also heard what you guys did to the two Malchei Amori on the eastern banks of the Yarden, the Sichon Lo'og, Hashechramtem Otam, that you wiped them out. Vanishma, and we heard this, Vayimas Levaveinu, and our hearts have melted, Velo Kama Od Ruach Be'ish Mipnechem, and therefore no man has the will to stand before you. Ki Hashem Elokeichem, Hu Elokeim, Vashamayim Mima'al, Vaharetz Mitachat. Hashem is the true God up above, and on the land bound below. It's an incredible statement by Rachav HaZonah, and just her understanding of what's transpiring over here and the changes that are taking place. And she, her recognition of God is amazing in this case. So now the Gemara here, actually after conflating the two issues, now points out that there's actually a difference in the wording between them. That is in Perek Hey, when it mentions about that the Malchei Amori heard about what happened when they crossed over the Yarden, and it says that Et Hashem Vish Hashem Meyarden Mipnei Bnei Yisrael Ad Avram Vayimas Levavam, their hearts melted. And they had no will to stand up to Bnei Yisrael. That's what's written in Perek Hey. You go back to Perek Bet, where it describes about the Yamsuf. It says, there's no will amongst men to stand before you. The extra word be'ish is found in Perek Bet. And that's what the Gemara is querying about here. Why is there a difference in the description of the reaction of the Malchei Amori, or the people, when it comes to Yitziat Mitzrayim and Kriyat Yamsuf, versus that of the crossing of the Yarden? And that is Maishna Hotam. Why over there, Perkei, where it speaks about the crossing of the Yarden, it says, Le'yabam Odruach, Maishna Hocha. And why over here, by the case of the Kriyat Yamsuf, Lukama Odruach, Be'ish? Why is there such a differentiation? And then the meaning of the word ish would be someone of stature. Below koma ruach beish would mean that those of stature did not stand up in a euphemistic sense, that they did not have an erection. That means that no man had an erection from that point forward because of the fear of the crossing of the Amsuf. Uminayata, how could Rachav HaZonah make such a statement? Damamar in the Chakol Sar Benagid Shlo Baal Rachav HaZonah. She was the madam of that period of time, and all the great princes and leaders came to pay visits to her. So she knew that after Kriyat Yam Suf, nothing was happening anymore because they were put out of business with the fact that they were fearful of the crossing of the Yam Suf, or the fact that Hashem took Bnei Yisrael through the Yam Suf. Both of those speak to the tremendous miracles that took place at Kriyat Yam Suf and the crossing of the Yarden. Obviously, crossing the Yarden is not what impacted Yitro, but the Kriyat Yam Suf is what impacted Yitro, and Rachav HaZonah seconds that the Malchei Amori were so fearful and so overcome by the news of Kriyat Yam Suf that they were melted. And so that would be a good reason that Yitro came, and again, the beginning of the Parshat Yitro seems to indicate he heard about Hashem taking them out of Mitzrayim, and that's what compelled him to come and visit them. So that's a third opinion. So Amru, Bat Yud Shani Maita, Kishiyatsu Yisrael Mi Mitzrayim. Rachav HaZonah was 10 years old when Bnei Yisrael left Mitzrayim. And she had znut for the entire 40 years that they were in the Midbar. Obviously, this is either in contrast to the previous statement of the Gemara that Akshuye Namilo Akshu, that they did not have any erections during that period of time. Or you have to say that this is talking about other people besides the Sarim and the Negidim. It was only the leaders that were fearful, not the other individuals. Achar Nun Shana, after she was 50 years old, Nitkaira, she converted. Amra, yehei mochulei b'schar chevel kalon u'pishtim, that I should granted forgiveness for that which I did to provide and protect the spies of Yeshua that came. She gave them rope to go out of the window and to climb out, u'pishtim, and she hid them in the flax that was on the roof. And Rashi says it's almost like a midah k'neged midah. She used the rope and the window to bring in her suitors when she was a zonah, and to hide them in the pishtim up above. And she did that same thing for the spies of Yeshua. And therefore, she says, with that which I did now, it should rectify what I've done before, as almost like a tshuva for that which she had done wrong until that point in time. So, Amar Mar, Vovdei Chukovim Bismanazeh Rasha'im Lasot Kain. The end of the Braita says that the Bamot Yachid that are described in Heter Bamot for Klal Yisrael, all that is allowed on the Bama, including all those different Beimot, the Tmimim, the Balimumim, Zakhar, Nikeva, anything that's not Mechuser Ever, Olot, and maybe Shlamim, depending on what the conclusion of the previous Gemara was. We say that that now is restricted, Bnei Yisrael, because we live during a time of Isur HaBamot. Nevertheless, Ovdei Kochavim Bizman Hazeh, non-Jews today, Rishayim Lasot Kein, they can follow all of those procedures that deal with the Bama, Heter HaBamot, and they can make Korbanot that way. Menahani Mile, how do you know that's true? The Tanur Rabbanan, because the Parshia of Achrei Mot that describes about Chutz says the Ber El Bnei Yisrael. That it says, speak to Bnei Yisrael. Bnei Yisrael mitzuvim ha-shchutei chutz. Shchutei chutz is only relevant to Bnei Yisrael. Bein ovdei chukavim mitzuvim ha-shchutei chutz. They're not commanded about shchutei chutz. Therefore, they don't have an Isur ha-bamot. Fika, kol echad ve'chad. So therefore, by the non-Jews, any individual, bonelo b'mal atzmo. He put up his own private misbeach. Makriv alea kol ma shirtze. And he can bring korbanot on it to his pleasure. Am Rav Yaakov bar Acha. Am Rav Asi, asur l'sayan. Even though it's heter bamot for the non-Jews, a Jew may not participate or help out in that matter. Now, lasot shlichutan is pretty straightforward because we believe that even though there is shliach l'mitzvah, there is no shlichut for a goy b'mitzvah. So therefore, even though the goy is permitted to do it, he can't create a shlichut with a Jew, and therefore if the Jew does it, he's doing it of his own volition, and means that he is then in violation of Shuhut Dechutz and Allah Bechutz, as opposed to being the emissary of their proxy of the Goy. So that's why you can't do their bidding. Also, Asur L'Sayyan, you can't help them out at all, because even though they have Heter Bamot, we don't have Heter Bamot, and therefore our helping or aiding them would then be a violation of the Dabero B'nei Yisrael, that you can't do Shuhut Dechutz and Allah Bechutz. Tosfot over here says, that why is it just simply that you can't help them and it's a sur to help them? He says, according to Rabbi Yossi, earlier in the Masechta, who says that you're chayav if you take kodshei ovdei kochavim and shochtam b'chutz chayav. Love the mitnei achal lashon asur. Shemi asur should be chayav over here. Says v'yesh lamar dekani asur. Says it is called asur lefi sheyesh kama avudot delo mechayv aleihu b'chutz. There's certain avudot that you're not chayav b'chutz. Asur lesayan. You're still not allowed to help them with those avudot because rino atu avudah debat chiyuva. Because that it comes out of the rubric or the restriction atu because possibly you'll come to those things that are asur. So all the avudot that you're chayav karet for, those you can't help out a goy with, and you'll be chayav karet for that, like Rabbi Yossi says. On the other hand, there are other avodot where you're not chayav karet, but you still may not help him because we don't want you then tripping up and then ending up doing those things that are restricted. So there's a restriction beyond that which you are chayav karet for. Others suggest over here that the distinction is about karet, which is that the chiyuv karet is only for a korban that's mukdash bifnim, that's done b'chutz. That's something that is subject to a chiyuv karet. This helping out a goy is restricted, but it's not a chiyuv karet. So only those things that were mukdash la mikdash, where they have a din of ra'oi lepetach kol moed, in that instance there it's a chiyuv karet for a Jew to participate or help out the goy. So then if the goy himself was makdish et lebama, then over there there's no ra'oi lepetach kol moed, so there's no chiyuv karet. And that's why you don't use the word chayav over here, but rather asur. Because in that case it would be asur to help out, even though you won't be chayav if you do help out. And that'll be the distinction between that which Rabbi Yossi said, where you're chayav, which is that's a korban that's mukdash to be brought to the mikdash, and then you assist or aid him to bring it on a bama, versus a korban that is dedicated to a bama. And when it's dedicated to be brought on a bama, a Jew cannot help, because it's a sur, but he won't be chayav karet for such a thing. Amar Rabba, ulorinu lohu shari. To give them instructions as how to do it, that's fine. You can't instruct them, you just can't aid and abet, and you cannot do their bidding. Kiha, to Ifra Hormiz. This is a similar story of Ifra Hormiz, a story that we find in Baba Batra as well. With regards to Ime, to Shadra Malka, she was the mother of Shadra Malka. Shadra Kurbana the Rova. She sent a Kurban to Rova. Shachale, Askua Niale, the Shem Shemaim. She said to him, make sure that it's Mukrav, like it's supposed to be, the Shem Shemaim, to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, to be done properly. Amar Lohu, the Rav Safra, the Rav Achar Barhuna. So he instructs his Talmidim, Rav Safra and Rav Acha Barhuna, Zilu, go ahead, Vidabru Trei Ume Gulai. Bring two youngsters, young non-Jewish men. Rashi over here says Gulai is Gilai. People who are of the same age. Shnei Ovdei Chavim Bachurim, Bnei Gil Echad, Shekein Noi Ledavar. Because that's something that is presentable, makes it look good. It's something that is enhancing of the Korban. Although Rashi and the Darim, and in other places translates B'nai Gilai as not being of the same age, but rather of the same mazel, that they were born under the same constellation. Chazu Echa Damasco Yama Sirton. Go find land where the ocean runs up over. I would assume it means where high tide goes and not low tide. So this is what we call virgin soil or virgin ground because nothing's there, never been worked because the ocean runs it over. Shaklut Sive Chadate. And make sure then you bring wood that is brand new. So you bring virgin earth to make the Mizbeach Adama. You bring new wood to be the pyre for the Mizbeach. Bafike Nura. And then you should create a fire, Mimara Chadata, from a new spade or hoe. The Rei Rashi explains it over here, that was basically like the flint stone was rubbed against the metal. It's a striker that causes the fire to start. The Shita Mikubetzet has a different girsa, not of Maro, but rather Magno, which is a shield, or something that was metallic. If you look in the Gemara in Yoma, in Pei Dalet Amud Aleph, you see a similar story over there, and it says there, Mimara Chadata. So we see that this type of language is used in other places, and then most likely that's what it means over here. Paskua Niale L'Shem Shemaim, and then have them be Makrivit L'Shem Shemaim. So here he's giving instructions for them how to do it. And that's a proof that you're allowed to instruct them. Who is Rava giving these instructions according to? Okay, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. That's following the view of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua. Tatanya, Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, Mer. Ma Mizbeach, Shalo Yishtamesh Bo Hejot. Just like the Mizbeach that is put up to be a place to sacrifice to Hashem is not used for personal reasons. It's only dedicated to a Kodesh Baruch Hu. Afetzim, Shalo Yishtamesh Bo Hejot. So too the wood for the pyre has to be wood that was not used or utilized or didn't have utility before it was put on the pyre. That requirement of Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua that the Mizbeach be made from virgin earth and be only dedicated to a Kodesh Baruch Hu, and that the wood be wood that is solely dedicated to Hashem and is never used otherwise, that's only true when you're talking about a Mizbeach in the Mishkan or Mizbeach in the Mikdash. Ba'amod Rabbi Elazar ben Shammua, but Bama, Boaz Ben Shemua agrees when you have a bama that you do not have these requirements. Titanio, because we have a stira on the psukim that are found in Divrei Yamim and in Shmuel Bet with regards to David's purchase of the land that then becomes the Makom HaMikdash. Ketuvah Chadomer, because one pasuk says in Divrei Yamim, Perek Chaf Aleph, Pasuk Chaf He, Vayitain David Arnan B'Makom, David pays Arnan, which we're going to see in Shmuel Bet is Aravna Yivusi, for the location, Shiklei Zahav, gold coins, Mishkal Sheish Meot, that weighed 600. Meaning that 600 gold coins is what he pays for the rights to that land. Vayiven Shem David Mizbeach LaShem, he builds a Mizbeach there to Hashem. Vayalo Lotu Shlamim, he brings a Lotu Shlamim. Vayikra El Hashem, Vayarneu Be'esh Min HaShemayim HaMizbeach HaOla. He calls out to Hashem and Hashem responds to him with a fire on that Mizbeach HaOla. That's what's written in Divrei HaYamim. Uchtiv, but when you go to Shmuel Bet, the story is slightly different. And there it says, Per Chavdalit Pasuk Chavdalit, Vayom Melech El Aravna, Lo, Tikano Eknem Otcha, Be'mechir. I'm going to buy this from you. I'm not going to have you give it to me for free. V'lo ele l'Hashem elukai olot chinam. I'm not going to give sacrifices to God that I didn't pay for, that I got for free. It has to be something that I bought, I purchased. Va'ikein David et agoren. He purchased the threshing area. Veta bakar. And the animals. B'kesef shkalim chamishim. With 50 silver coins. Va'yivin sham David mizbeach l'Hashem. Then he builds a mizbeach. Va'yalo lo tushlamim. Ve'yetar Hashem la'aretz, ve'tayatzar magifa mal Yisrael. So then he prays to Hashem for the land, and that stops the magifa, the plague that's taking place beforehand that was causing problems for Klal Yisrael, that puts an end to that plague. So here you have a stira in the price that was paid for that piece of land. In Divrei Yamim it says it was 600 golden coins, and in Shmuel Bet it says it was 50 silver coins. Haketzad, how do you reconcile those two? Goveh mikol shevet shevet chamishin. He took 50 coins from each shevet. Shein sheishmot. When you take 12 shvatim times 50, you get to 600 coins. Gemara later on will ask, what about the fact that it was silver and gold? So the Gemara will answer later on that it was silver that was collected in gold weight. So it means that you collected silver coins that weighed 50 gold coins worth. And then those 50 gold coins worth were aggregated 12 times to get you to 600 gold coins worth. So it was paid in silver coins for 50 gold coins worth of silver coins. And then those were then consolidated to get you to the 600 gold coins. It's not the easiest reading. The Rabbeinu Tam over here says, Rabbeinu Tam omer sheyesh b'midrash. Midrash says that natan lo chamishim shikle zav, that he gave them 50 gold coins, dainu sheyesh meot shikle kesef, which is equivalent to 600 silver coins. Which is a very hard midrash, because that goes directly against the psukim, which say that it was 50 of silver and 600 of gold. But given that midrash that says they gave 50 gold coins, which equated to 600 silver coins, which means that the ratio between gold and silver is 12 times, he says that that's problematic, because the Gemara in Baba Kama and in Baba Tzia seems to indicate that a dinar zahav, a gold coin, is equal to 25 dinarei kesef. So the translation or the conversion rate is 25 to 1, not 12 to 1. Truth is that in some places it's 24 to 1, not 25 to 1. But either way, it's a multiple, not the same number as what's being suggested over here. And this brings Rabbeinu Tam to his conclusion that the dinar hazahav actually was twice as thick as the silver coin. And see, yes, the conversion rate between silver and gold is only 12 times. So that means over here, if they collected 50 gold coins, 12 times that is 600 silver coins. And that is the right relationship, and we in the past have sent out how that relationship between gold and silver was at the time of the Rabbeinu Tam, around 10 to 12 times. And that's what the Rabbeinu Tam is speaking to, that it's around that ratio of 12 to 1. But how come over there the Gemara says it's really 24 or 25 to 1? That's because the gold coin was twice as thick as the silver coin. So it gave you twice as much in silver worth because it was twice as thick. So the Zahav coin, which is twice as thick, is going to give you 24 or 25 times. And that's what's meant over here, that the gold-silver relationship is 12, yet the Gemara calls it 25 because they had thicker dinarei zahav, which then gave you double the amount of silver coins. So then, that's one solution. Another solution is brought by Rabbi Omer, Mishum Abba Yossi ben Dustai, Bakar ve'itzim umakom mizbeach benun. He bought the animals, the wood, and the location mizbeach for the 50 silver coins. V'chol abayit kulo, the remainder of the land, or the tract of land that would become the harabayit, he bought that b'sheish meot. Belazer ben Shamu omer, bakar ve'etzim u'makom mizbeach menun, v'chol abayit kulo b'sheish meot. So now, the way that we have in the Gersa of our Gemara, Belazer ben Shamu is identical with Rabbi, and Rashi over there says about that, Breita zo mishubeshet. It's clear that this Breita is incorrect, it's mishubeshet bet svarim, because it can't be that Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua is identical with Rabbi. It's in the Sifrei b'Birkat Kohanim, v'kach yishnuya. And this is what it says. Ha-keitzad, makom mizbeach b'chamishim, the makom mizbeach is with 50, v'kol abayit b'sheish meot, was for 600. Rabbi omer b'shem Abba Yossi ben Dustai, gava mikol shevet chamishim she'en sheish meot. So that's the Tanakama's view that's now placed in Rabbi. And Rabbi's view is in the Tanakamo, but the way that view reads is that Malkom Mizbeach was 50, and the whole bite, the whole tract of land for Har Bayit was 600. Belazer ben Shamua Mer, by King David, et a Goren, kimin afresh b'inyan, like he explains there in the Inyan. Vayitain la Ravna b'makom shiklei zahav, mishkal sheish meot. Aval ha-bakar le'ula v'amurigin, mukleya bakar le'itzim b'kesef shkalim 50. So that's what Rashi says over here. You have to understand the pasuk differently, which is, by King David to Goren, comma, and then Veta Bakar Bekesim Shkalim Chamishim. And then the materials, or that which he needed, he paid 50 silver coins for. And similarly, in Divrei Hayamim, you have to understand the pasuk to mean, by Itain David Arnan Bamakom, for the place, Shiklei Zahav Mishkal Sheish Meot. And so what he's noting over here is that the cost of the land was 600 shekel. The cost of the materials to build the Mizbeach and to be makrib the korban was the 50 shekel kesef. And that he divides up between the materials that he's buying versus the land that he's buying, because it says b'makom. In Divrei Hayamim it says he paid for the location. And then that's the price of the location. And then in Shmuel Bet, Rashi splits the pasuk to say that v'ikein David et goren, comma, that's what he bought, and that's the number that's mentioned in Divrei Hayamim. It's bakar because of shkolem k'chamishim, and then the remainder of the materials from there. Dichtiv, and what's the proof to Rabbi Elazar ben Shamua's position? Because Vayomer Ravna David, early on there it says, Ikach Vayalo Dunia Melech Hatov Beinav, and take whatever you want from here. Reya Bakar Leolav Amorigim Klei Bakar Leitzim. Take the Bakar to bring his Olot, and take the Morigim and the Klei Bakar, which are made out of wood, to use for the wood on the pyre. So he had offered that to him, and David turns him down and says, I'm going to pay for it. So here in Shmuel Bet, he's speaking about paying for those items. In Divrei Hayamim, he's speaking about paying for the land and purchasing the land. Now, these items are clearly wood that is used. This is wood that was used for a morig, which the Gemara will explain in 1 second what that is, klei bakar, and the utensils for the plow and for the oxen to use in the working of the fields. They were brand new. They were never used. And so that's why it was allowed to be used for the pyre. My morigin, what are these morigin? Amarula, mita shel turbal. It is a bed of turbal. Then what's a mitashel turbal? Amrabaya iza de karkasa de daishin dishai. It is like a goat with hooks or a platform with incisions that are made into it, sharp points that come out of it, that they use for threshing. It is a flat board that has either projectiles or carvings in it, and you run that over the grain that is there, and that causes disha, the threshing, to take place. It causes the chaff and the straw to fall away from the seeds. And that's how you separate away the seeds from that which is the discard. And you do that dash through the animal pulling this heavy board, whether somebody stands on that board, or whether you have the animals walk on that board, or later on, they were more developed into where they had a number of rows of wheels that spun around that caused the crushing and the disha to take place. So that's what that morigim are. Makes sense. It's farm equipment that was there that Ravna is offering to David to use for the pyre. Amar Krabayi Maikra. Where do we have a pasuk that teaches us that's the meaning of the morigin? Hinei samtich lemorag charutz chadash bal pipiot. Says, I'm going to make you like a morag, a threshing board, charutz, that is carved, that creates the unevenness of the bottom of the board, chadash, that is brand new, bal pipiot, that has sharp edges to it. This is the board that is used by those that thresh, that has either these hooks, these metallic projectiles, or these carved grooves in it to crush the grain. And over here in the pasuk in Yeshayahu, it's referencing to that Hashem will make you into a threshing board that will crush the mountains that are in front of you. Because the remainder of the pasuk says, Tadu sharim v'tadok u'gvot kamot tasim, that you will thresh the mountains, pulverize the high points, kamot tasim, and you'll make it like the chaff that falls away. Tizreim v'ruach tisaim, they will be spread away, and the wind will carry them off. Usara tafitz utam, and the tempest will spread them out. V'tatagil b'ashem k'dosh Yisrael titalal, and you will rejoice in Hashem, the sanctified of Israel, titalal, you will give praise to. So you see over there that the word morag is used in the same manner, in a bigger scale, that it will crush or pulverize, which is the work that the morag, or the threshing utensil, does. Makalei Rava lebrei. So Rava was teaching his son, so he taught over these psukim, v'ramilei kraya hadodi, and he brought the stira from Divrei Yamim and Shmuel Bet with regards to the interaction and the transaction between David and Arav Naivusi. Tivaitin David Larnan, that's the 600 shekel zahav. Tivaitin David, which is the 50 shekel kesef. Haketzat, how do you reconcile that? Gova, mikoshev v'shevet chamishim, shein sheish meot. So he brings the answer that we saw before, that's brought in the Braita. Makati kashena hadodi. Even with that solution, you still have a problem. Mahatam kesef v'achazav. Over there it's silver, and over here it's gold. So even if you say it's 12 shvatim giving 50 to get to you 600, one is a silver currency and one is a gold currency. Elochi kamar, goveh kesef mishkal shesh meot zahav. That he collected silver coins that weighed 600 gold coins. Or he collected 50 gold coins weight of silver coins, and they were consolidated up into 600 gold coins weight of silver coins. That's how he reconciles between the Kesem Zav, and that's what we spoke about before. Now we're back to our Mishnah. And the Mishnah continued by saying, Kodshim Kalim, when they were in the Midbar, Nechalim, Bechol Machane Yisrael. Is eaten throughout Machane Yisrael. Amar Rav Huna, Bechol Mekomot Yisrael. Is anywhere it is Yisrael. Avo Machane Lohavi. But there was no Machane Yisrael. It's not clear here that Rashi has this girsa, and the Shita Mikubetza actually takes it out. But the implications and the way that Rashi explains it is, that even if you went out of the Machane Yisrael, you still would be qualified to eat Kodshim Kalim, because it is Mot Yisrael. Anywhere a Jew is found, that's a place you can eat Kodshim Kalim. So it's not governed by Machane Yisrael, but governed about Makom Yisrael. So that's the Havamina. Where it says, Eitve Rav Nachman le Rav Huna. So Rav Nachman then poses the question to Rav Huna. If you eliminate the girsa of Amachane lo havi etave, then it would just read Amar Rav Huna b'chol mekamot Yisrael, and again you would have that havamina, and then it would be Amar Rav Nachman the Rav Huna u machanot b'midbar lo havi. Were there really no machanot in the midbar? There was no delineation that said that Machane Yisrael ended at that point. V'atanya, don't we have a bright on the Tosefta of Kelim that compares that which is found in the midbar to that which is found in Yerushalayim? K'shem shemachane b'midbar, kachen machane b'Yerushalayim. Just like there are different areas of Kedusha in the midbar, so too there are different areas of Kedusha in Yerushalayim. Yerushalayim the Harabayit, Yerushalayim the city until the point of Harabayit is Machane Yisrael. That's parallel with Machane Yisrael in the midbar. And just like in Yerushalayim you can eat the Kodshim Kalim inside the walls of the city, so too there, it would also mean that you can only eat it within Machane Yisrael. And you wouldn't have the flexibility to eat it wherever you want. Harabayit l'shar nikanor. Harabayit until the entrance to the Azara. Machane Levia was the equivalent of Machane Levi in the Midbar, where people who had Tuma, Hayotze Migufan, were not allowed to enter. Although Tmei Meitim and Tmei Sheretz were allowed to enter into Machane Levi. Mikan Veilech, from Shar Nikanor inwards, that is Machane Shechina. That's the equivalent of the Machane Shechina, where nobody who's Tamei is allowed in. Vehein hein klaim sheba midbar. And that area is the equivalent of where the curtains were in the midbar, which is the area that's encircled as the Chatzer Ol Moed. And in the Mikdash, that's the Azara, where in which you have to eat the Kodshei Kodashim. So you see that there are delineations even within the midbar. And you can't say Bechol Mekamot Yisrael means anywhere you choose. Ela Eima Bechol Makom Machane Yisrael. Anywhere in Machane Yisrael you can eat it. Where it says Pshita, of course. If it's Machane Yisrael is a qualified area, why should there be any limitations as to where you eat it? Maudotemo Ifsalu Biyotze. I would have thought maybe they would be Pasul Biyotze. Kamash Malan, that that's not the case. So Rashi explains over here, what does that mean? B'chol makomot Machane Yisrael. Shafilu b'shat siluk masot. Even when they packed up and were traveling, ein nifsalin. There you do not become pasul. You do not lose the status of Machane Israel. Elamol chanimo. You take the kochim kalim along with you. Umakom chaniatam uchlam b'machane. And when they reestablish the machane, then you can eat the kochim kalim. And so what it's teaching you is machom makom b'machane Israel does not mean anywhere in Machane Israel. It means that everywhere is Machane Israel. Wherever they are traveling, wherever they're going, still qualified as Machane Israel. According to Rashi, that means it's qualified enough that they're not pasul b'yotze. But that's not strong enough to allow you to eat until they reestablish Machane Yisrael. Bait Tosafot over here disagree and say that when we say that it is Machane Yisrael, it means you can eat it, even when they're on the move, because it's classified as Machane Yisrael, both when they're at rest and when they're on the move. Veima Achanami. So how come we don't say that that's the case? When they pack things up, that collapses Machane Yisrael. Because Amakra, the Pasuk says, Nasa Ol Moed. The Moed will travel. Afo Pish Nasa Ol Moed Hu. Even though it's traveling, it still has the status of Ol Moed. So we actually saw this back on Samach Aleph Amud Bet. And over there we had a Machloket Rashi in the Balei Tosafot, and that Machloket appears here again. Rashi doesn't really mention it, but Tosafot mentions the Machloket again, which is Tosafot believes that this din, that Ol Moed remains Ol Moed, is only true for Kodshim Kalim, and not true for Kodshei Kodoshim. And the meaning of Nasa Ol Moed then is, Afo Pish Nosa Ol Moed, who retains the status of Ol Moed, to generate the encampment of Bnei Yisrael around it, or to be the central location of the camp of Bnei Yisrael, even when they travel. But that doesn't mean that the Machane Shechina is still intact. And that's what Tosafot argues, based on the Gemara Menachot, that Kodshei Kodashim are Nifsalim, once they dismantle the Klaim that surround the Ohel Moed. Although Tosafot does agree that if the Lechem HaPanim is still found on the Shulchan, or items that are in their place, that they are not Pasol B'Yotzei, when they dismantle and they carry the Mishkan. That's because Tosafot believes that you need klayim, you need curtains, in order to eat the Kodshei Kodashim. And as soon as you dismantle the curtains, you can no longer eat Kodshei Kodashim, they're now psul yotze, and you can no longer consume them. Rashi, on the other hand, believes that even after the klayim are taken down, there still is a status of the place being a makom for Kodshei Kodashim, and you can eat the Kodshei Kodashim. And again, when you travel, they're not necessarily pasul with that travel of yotze. You just can't eat them until they reestablish once you've settled down. Even if you don't have the curtains up, but once the aron is put into place, you can eat the kodshei kodashim. So Rashi believes that this has impact, that fact that it's called Ol Moed, even when it's traveling, has impact on kodshim kalim and on kodshei kodashim. Whereas Tosafot only believes it has impact on kodshei kalim. And then the other distinction is that Rashi thinks that when you're on the move, you can't eat it. It's only when you come to rest that you can eat it. But Tosafot says that which it's qualified for, the Kodshim Kalim, not only can you eat it when it's at rest, but even when on the move. It's called Ol Moed, and you can eat the Kodshim Kalim during that period of time. Tanya, Rabbi Shimon bar Yochai Omer, Oda Cheret Haita, seems to be Oda Cheret Haita. Now here there's a question about the Girsa. Either it's Ezrat Nashim Hi, without the word Chayon, and you can see that old cough in the Shittim Mekubetzet, or it's Oda Cheret Haita, V'chel, Ezrat Nashim Hi. It's two items that are here. And Oda Cheret Haita means other Maila that Rishlaim has that's not found in the Midbar. And those are the Chel and the Ezrat Nashim. Beloye Unshim Alea. And they do not punish for it. So most Rishonim see that this is a reference to the Takana that they put in place in the time of Yoshafat. They spoke about before that Tvul Yom may not enter into Ezrat Nashim. So even though it's not punishable by the problems of entering into the Mikdash Bitum'ah, because Midoraita, it's totally fine for the Tvul Yom to go into that area of the Ezrat Nashim. Nevertheless, they've made a takana that Tvul Yom may not enter into that area of the Ezrat Nashim. So there's a restriction without the death penalty associated with it, or without the penalty associated with it. Zoi Edin Derabonon. If you also include in the Girsa of the Chel, those are the Sorigim that are mentioned in Masechet Midot, that surround outside the Ezrat Nashim, which was also a safety area beyond which a Tamei Mate was not allowed to go. Even though the Tamei Mate is allowed in Machane Levia or in Har HaBayit, still they created a boundary beyond which the Tamei Mate should not go, including not going to Ezrat Nashim, but also into this area of the Chel. And non-Jews weren't allowed past that point on Har HaBayit, which is an area that surrounds the entire Azra, including the Ezrat Nashim. And so that's an additional Maila that's in Yerushalayim that wasn't there in the Midbar. So whether you just Goreis Ezrat Nashim or Chel and Ezrat Nashim, Yerushalayim has these additional areas that are also kadosh, or have a sanctification which creates differentiation that do not appear in the Midbar. Okay, we're going to stop here. Two lines from the bottom of Kuftet Zayin Amud Bet.